Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you live and direct from the beautiful sunny city of Los Angeles, California. The heartbeat of Fox Sports Radio. Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything when it's game time. Have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Did you watch last night? Did you watch? There was some other stuff going on, right, in your life, in your world. Major League Baseball. I know there's some TV shows that I have not caught up on. You know, Big Bang Theory apparently came to an end a couple nights ago. Was that last week? Had no idea. It's okay. It's on in, what's it called, Ramos, when you, syndication, right? Those shows, like Seinfeld, it felt like they never went away. Did you watch the NBA playoffs last night? Game 4, Eastern Conference Finals. If you didn't, Toronto won. Norman Powell had kind of a breakthrough game. Fred VanVleet, who had been struggling in the playoffs, made some shots, made some plays. And Kawhi Leonard, despite being injured, or excuse me, hurt, played well enough to win. Meanwhile, the Milwaukee Bucks struggled to make shots again. But I found myself really, really, really struggling. I love basketball. And I'm watching Kawhi Leonard, who for my money is one of the top three players in the game. There is the irony to the fact that he missed most of last season with an injury that the Spurs thought he had already come back from. And last night he was playing clearly dinged up, which I'm not sure if it's exchange rate or the Canadian healthcare policy or whatever it is. But it is interesting that he's playing hurt in playing for Team Canada, whereas he didn't seem to want to play hurt playing for the San Antonio Spurs. Granted, different injuries, but it's at least interesting. Giannis Antetokounmpo continues to struggle with his shooting and doesn't appear to be totally ready to be a breakthrough superstar in the playoffs. But nonetheless, you got two of the top five, top 10 players in the game. You have the Toronto Raptors who, hell, as late as last year, had the best record in the NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks had the best record in the NBA this year. Or excuse me, the Raptors last year, best record in the Eastern Conference. And so it's not like they're totally Johnny-come-latelys, but I just struggled with the lack of kind of brand identification. That's really what it comes down to, right? It's like when there's a new car on the market. You're like, I need to see some Consumer Reports reviews before I really decide whether or not I'm going to get in it. Now, take the Volvo, for example, right? Now, Volvo has kind of switched hands a couple times over the last 20 years in terms of who owns the company. But you already have established in your mind what a Volvo is. When I say Volvo, what do you think? Like, man, that's a safe car. That's a boring, safe car. Right? So even if they make some beautiful sedans now, they make some cool SUVs, you can't get out of your mind the branding that has been established. Correct? A Chevy Impala now. The Impala now is really just kind of a family commuter sedan. But if you're my age, you remember about 20 years ago, they came out with an Impala that was an Impala Supersport that had like a Corvette engine in. And if you're an old timer, you remember the Impala as a souped up car, right? Again, the brand identification with the name, that's smart. And it's interesting. My favorite show that I've binge watched, and I didn't watch Breaking Bad when Breaking Bad was a thing. It was like a couple years later. I didn't watch The Wire when The Wire was a thing. It was a couple years later. I didn't watch Mad Men when Mad Men was a thing. It was a couple years later. I'm now binge watching with my daughter The Office. It was great. Last night we watched the Cafe Disco one. Do you guys remember the Cafe Disco one? Cafe Disco is awesome. But my favorite one was Mad Men. And I have a marketing degree. I'm fascinated by ad sales and advertising. I'm also interested in kind of that era in society. And I like the storylines. But part of what you learn is about how the genius of advertising is creating an image that locks in with the brand. And we just haven't had enough time to understand who the Raptors are or to really get our arms around the Milwaukee Bucks. And it's not their fault. They're not bad. They're really good. But because they haven't been really good at a high level for a long time, I just find myself struggling to buy into watching it. Like, being with an established brand matters. And I think this is all throughout sports. Like, this offseason is going to be fascinating. Right? Like, are they really going to advise Kevin Durant or Kawhi Leonard to tie in with the Clippers brand? Right? Like, do you really want to tie in with the Clippers brand? Because even though I have great respect for what they're doing, like, that is a really well-run franchise. They got rid of their three best players over the last 2 years, and they appear to have come out the other side as a playoff team with a championship-caliber coach, with championship-caliber management, with an owner everyone seems to like and just loves being an owner of a team, cap space, and even though they're still the third tenant in their arena, they might be the favorite to get Kawhi Leonard and maybe Kevin Durant. Like, that's crazy. On the other hand, they're still the Clippers. Like, the Nets have the same problem in Brooklyn. Whereas the Lakers, with all of the issues that they have, they're still the freaking Lakers. Heck, I can make the case Juwan Howard is going to be the new head coach at the University of Michigan. And I've told people for the 20 years or so, almost 20 years I've been out of school, like, I don't think people understand the true value to a college scholarship is you get to identify with that school's brand for the rest of your life. Juwan Howard he's only getting that job for one reason. He's a Michigan man. I'm not saying he's not qualified. I'm not saying he's not going to do a good job. Don't get it twisted. But had he not gone to, played at Michigan and established his own brand as part of the Fab Five and two Final Fours and then gone on to be a brilliant professional player and now an assistant coach in the pros, he would have no shot if he didn't go to Michigan. And I think it's a good thing. You bring a Michigan guy home, becomes, I believe, the only Power Five conference school to have a an alum as football and basketball coach. Harbaugh now, obviously, the football coach. But branding is real. We can pretend like it doesn't matter, but it's a real issue and also a real strength depending on who's actually playing. Take Adam Silver's word for it. This was Adam Silver, who was asked on the Today Show, mainstream TV, about ratings being down because LeBron wasn't in the playoffs.
LeBron is one of the biggest stars in the world, and he also played in the East. And so, you know, the reason I look a little bit tired is a lot of our games are in the West, and it's late at night, and I recognize most people choose to go to sleep at a reasonable time. And so from a rating standpoint, not having LeBron in the playoffs, not having him in the East has clearly impacted ratings. If you start a game at 6 p.m. local time in the West, it's not the most convenient thing. It's not as convenient for a television watcher on the West Coast either. But when you look at the league from a national standpoint, it may make sense to play a little bit earlier in the West, and that's something we're going to talk to our teams about this summer.
Yeah, we're going to take a look at it. Yeah. We're going to take a look at it. It's like when you're a parent and you say maybe. My kids always say that. Don't say maybe. Maybe means no. I'll take a look at it. Dad, can I have dinner? Can I have a dessert? We'll take a look at it. Maybe. That's a no. You going to move your games to 6 o'clock? We'll take a look at it. We're going to look at it this summer. Take a look at it. Maybe. That's not happening. Look, these two teams, Milwaukee and Toronto, are better than LeBron's Cavaliers team last year, but fewer people will watch. Why? Well, one is north of the border. The other one's in Milwaukee. But two, they're not established brands. The Celtics are an established brand. They are. LeBron is an established brand. Wherever he goes, his brand, his winning, makes you want to watch. The Warriors have become an established brand through five finals in a row. So I find myself watching two of the elite teams in the NBA, and I've heard other people say, well, this is a watered-down NBA. Like, no, it's not. These are just two of the best teams. You're just not used to... The Sixers were really good this year. The Celtics were really pretty darn good this year. Those four teams are good in the West. They're good in the East. I would make the case that the West isn't nearly as strong as it used to be, and the East was far better. Why do you have this embedded in your brain that the West is so much better? Branding. They've won 14 of the last 20 NBA finals. More than anything, it's been pounded away year after year, and it just takes time. So me, as an avid basketball viewer, a former player who covers it, knows the coaches, knows the players. We had a couple coaches on, Monty Williams and who else do we have on yesterday? Frank Vogel on yesterday. Download the pod. Shameless plug. I can tell you that even though it's suddenly become a 2-2, anyone can take this series, that Toronto's finally got Fred VanVleet playing, finally got some contributions from their bench and Norman Powell, and even though Kawhi is banged up, they're winning the last two games and their defense has been excellent. Then the Milwaukee returns home and you would expect them to play far better at home. It's become anybody. It should be super exciting. And I can't wait. And I'm like, eh. Because whether it's a sports brain or just my regular brain, I have trouble with the lack of branding and established winning presence, not necessarily culture, but mindset as a fan of either one of these teams. There's just no buy-in to them because I haven't seen them do it before. And then I guess the question for the NBA is, do the Bucks become the Spurs or the Thunder? Right? I mean, they're coached by a former Spur assistant, and Giannis seems like Tim Duncan to be about the right things and not necessarily about publicity, even though he does have some TV commercials. And there's always going to be some limitations market size-wise. But the Thunder only got to one NBA Finals, but seem to become far more watchable, even if they don't nearly have the wins to back it up like the Spurs do. And if the Raptors don't win this series, are they forever like the Cleveland Cavaliers of the 90s? Not even the Knicks or the Pacers, who both got to an NBA Finals. The Cavaliers, remember, they used to have a loaded roster, but they could never get past Jordan. And now with this era's Jordan LeBron out of the East, they can't get past the Bucks. They're forever kind of mired in that really, really good but not great category. I struggled yesterday. I'll struggle to recap it, to pay attention to it, even though I would tell you Kawhi Leonard and Giannis are two remarkable stars, and these are two really good teams. But the Raptors haven't been able to establish themselves as winners, and the Bucks just haven't been doing it long enough for most of us to buy in.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get the opinion of a good friend of mine. You can hear his Dual Threat podcast on The Ringer, as well as his own podcast, the Ryan Russillo podcast. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Ryan, look, you're like me. We watch ball anytime it's on TV. But what's your level of, I don't know, energy in watching when it's the Bucks and the Raptors?
I really got up for game one. I loved what I saw from the Bucks first half of game two. I thought it was incredible. I mean, really, really impressive. But I also say that because I think Toronto's a good team. And I found it kind of weird how dismissive it felt like the public was just after those first two. It was already like, okay, how's Golden State going to match up with Milwaukee? But I struggled with last night. I did. I feel like there are games where you go, are you really locked into everything that's happening? And for whatever reason, it wasn't really happening that way after a big time win for Toronto in game three. I think that the guards are kind of the story throughout this. Like, we know Kawhi, there's a max version of him. There's still a baseline version of him that's great. It's probably the same thing with Giannis. But the guards are so inconsistent, and I don't really know what to expect. I've never been a huge Lowry guy in this run, but got to give him credit. He kind of kept them going last night, and he's had bigger games, throughout the playoffs, probably this run through than other ones. But it was, I'm still trying to feel it out because I just once Milwaukee misses all their shots in their backcourt guys, and it's easier to send Giannis, and that was kind of the game, even though Kawhi didn't really have to go off, and because he didn't. So it was really about supporting guys.
Okay, so I guess here's maybe the question. I was watching the game four of the Blazers game against the Warriors. And it was just fun, right? Like, those dudes were just out there hooping. And the shot-making from the Warriors and the first for the Blazers to take the lead and then the Warriors for the comeback was incredible. I don't know if it's just guards or it's the way they play or it's the fact I know the Warriors, are playing down three guys. I don't know what it is. I don't know. It just felt more fun, even though that series was over. It was three games to none. It was a wrap, whether the Blazers won that game or not. Why do you think it is? Why do you think it was so much more fun?
You're right. It is more fun. I mean, this is the whole point. This is like why I've kind of gotten mad that everybody hates Golden State so much, is that, this is still awesome to watch. And now without Durant, and they're motivated by it, which I think is a real thing, but it doesn't mean they're better without Durant. It just, I think they want to remind everybody what they accomplished before he showed up there. And the freedom of movement, and Steph proving that, there's certain stars in this league that are only going to play their way. Westbrook is one of those guys. I think Harden is that. There's other players that you just know, no matter who's around me, I'm always playing my way. This just proves that Steph is one of the most accommodating superstars we've ever seen, that he can go back to this guy that he was for a few years before Durant shows up. And I'm with you. Game three, I went out with some friends. We had dinner. We watched that. I mean, I don't really care who wins or loses any of these things anymore, but it's just, it's a reminder of how special those two guards are when they're running around like crazy and they have to make all the shots and they don't have this fix-it guy who's 7-1 who can make any shot he wants to in Durant. So it's raised their level up, and I don't think you're wrong for that at all. There is a letdown because this Warriors thing has been a lot of fun the last 2 weeks.
What if I made the case and Andre Iguodala said that Steph's the second best ever? I think he meant point guard. We can argue that if we want. I do think he's changed basketball and what's a good shot, what's a bad shot. Gilbert Arenas used to take these shots just to far less success and on a lesser stage than what Steph is doing. But I would make the case that the game changer really in terms of the history of the NBA is Draymond. And we had Vogel on yesterday and Vogel was like, he's just, you could just tell by his voice, he was blown away by how the sport has changed so dramatically since he had Roy Hibbert and they're in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cavs. And then, like 2 years later, like Roy Hibbert's basically out of the league, right? Because you can't play a traditional center who can't move his feet, anymore in the league. Like there's no place for them. And I think Draymond, as much as Steph has changed what we view as a good shot and a bad shot in the range for guys, I think Draymond's the guy who's changed the league more. Would you say Dre or Steph is a more transcendent pro?
It's a really good point about Draymond, but I disagree. I just feel like Steph has made everyone change the way we look at offense in a weird way. I think it's you could argue he's negatively impacted because I see guys that aren't even ready to shoot trying to take these shots that Steph makes, and you go, why would you take that with 17 seconds left on the shot clock? And it's this obsession with threes, and even though the math is telling us that basketball should have been doing this for a while,
yeah,
doesn't mean every ridiculous three-point attempt is a good one. And I feel like some players think that after watching Steph. And for a small player to do what he's done and start as an off-guard where Mark Jackson didn't really see him the way Steve Kerr did, and part of that's Steph's own development, and then, they used to play him off of Jarrett Jack. And then it's like, okay, now we can play him as a scoring point guard because that changed, because of other point guards before him. Like, you can't be a point guard in the NBA now if you can't score. Before, that used to be like, he's not going to be a very good point because he's not thinking team first, all those things. So I think Draymond being part of the sizing down revolution and everybody going smaller and that Hampton Five lineup not scaring people the way it used to because other people are just used to it and they have their own versions of it, I think it's a really good argument. But I don't know that other players can do what Draymond does. So Draymond's doing this thing that when I see him, like Enos Kanter couldn't back him down. And then he's jumping into passing lanes and then running the fast break and making the right decisions. There's just, I don't think there's other guys that can do or even try to do what Draymond has done as much as people try to do what Steph has done.
Right, but I actually think they're one and the same. And oh yeah, by the way, the genius to Kerr, you're right, in terms of playing him as Steph as a point, but he also plays him, as soon as he passes the basketball and he starts moving, now he becomes a two-guard again, and that it's because they have Draymond as like a point center, and because they have Durant, who's like a point power forward, and they have other guys that can facilitate as well. Like, it all just kind of, you know, Andre Iguodala is kind of like, kind of got some point guard skill to him. And so it's doing both, and the fact that he can do both is crazy amazing. I don't know. It's a fascinating team to watch. There's a new report out. Mark Stein basically saying he can go anywhere, right? His own Rich Kleiman comes out and goes, he's 100% open, undecided as to where he's going. Where do you think KD's brain really is?
A lot of this is semantics. I mean, I saw Kleiman's interview, and I mean, what's going to say? He's not going to tell it. I mean, a lot of this is trying to diffuse all this stuff. I think a lot of this is very similar to kind of big decisions we often make in life. Is you may not have made that final decision, but there's always a lean. There's always a direction you're more likely to go in. And for every bounce of the Kawhi shot, you know, whether it's Game 7 going in against Philly, it's like, oh, he's going to stay. And then they were down 2-0, and it's like, oh, he's going to leave. And like, Kawhi probably already knows what he's doing. So I look at the Durant thing from the beginning of how it changes from Golden State. Because I mean, last year when I was talking to people around the league, the confidence coming out of Golden State that he was returning, and it was just a, you know, just, hey, let's just get this contract done and he can figure out whatever terms he wants. This year it's different. There's a lack of confidence from people that you talk about with Golden State and their ability to retain him. So if you start trying to map this out, when I was in Chicago this past weekend, as much as it's always been about the Knicks, the Brooklyn thing just picked up as an option, and I know Stein was writing the Clippers and maybe some of these other places, but I don't know why he would open it up to all of these different places. I mean, part of me still thinks, like, if he's pursuing happiness after being in one of the happiest basketball situations, I just hope he knows what he's doing here, even though I selfishly want him to leave Golden State so we can watch these guards run around more. I mean, if he thinks he's unhappy at times because of the criticism of Golden State, I mean, what's it going to be like if he's on the Knicks and R.J. Barrett's the second-best player on the team, and Dolan's still the owner, and they're in the fourth or five seed battle, and he's in New York, and there aren't other people to deflect the attention. I mean, it's going to get ugly fast for a guy that has proven that this stuff can bother him.
Yeah, I you know, if you don't like the media attention in Oakland and into San Francisco, how are you going to enjoy that in New York? All right, what do you think of the damage that was potentially done by Magic Johnson to the Lakers this upcoming offseason?
Are we just talking about the TV hit, or are we talking about everything in general?
Both, but I do think that the TV hit is a, it made it from people think that it's a mess to people knowing that it's a mess. And I felt like it's an act of complete disloyalty. And, you know, especially it's like the guy that goes no disrespect and says something disrespectful. That's what he did when he goes like, oh, you know, first thanks to Jeannie. I love her like a sister. And then he just napalms the place. But I don't know if you think it didn't do damage. Okay. I'm just intrigued by it.
No, I'm not saying that. Like, I just don't know. Like, you can't get blood out of a stone, you know, like at this point. I mean, I think everybody knows it's dysfunctional. I think there's also been this thing going on for years that, like, Jeannie Buss is going to come to the rescue and solve all their problems, and that hasn't been the case at all. And if she's trying to appease a bunch of different people to make people happy, that's usually the worst way of going about trying to be a leader. I mean, it's really tough to lead and placate everyone. But Magic, think about, you know, you have an ego, I have an ego. You have to have an ego to do this talk show thing for as long as you've done it. If I were Magic Johnson, I would have a massive ego. I mean, it'd probably be annoying to be around me. And I think Magic has it, and he has a right to have that kind of ego. So I felt like his first take appearance was about him protecting his image to Lakers fans because he bolted. I mean, it was a really weird and let's face it, unprofessional way to do it. He didn't leave. Remember his excuse for that impromptu conference, like, hey, I'm resigning from the Lakers? And he said he didn't want to tell Jeannie Buss to her face because she was afraid he would talk him out of it. No, he was mad. And if Pelinka really was dumping on him in a disrespectful way to his superior, then that's on Pelinka, and Magic should be mad about that. I think we all have to kind of remind ourselves what the structure of this was going to be. Magic was going to be the franchise face. He was going to be that rock star who could talk to other stars in the NBA and get the meetings that the Lakers weren't getting, which didn't make any sense. When LaMarcus Aldridge decides he doesn't want to meet with you in free agency, that's a major problem. So they move on from Kupchak. They bring in a rock star. We knew that, you know, Magic wasn't going to be working, you know, every one of these lower conferences, conference championship tournaments. Like, he wasn't going to be doing any of that stuff, and I think that was okay. So then if he was going to get ripped for not doing the things I don't think any of us ever thought he was going to do from the beginning, I could see him being upset about it. But I don't know why they did the signings they had after. It didn't make any sense after LeBron. They tried to say, we need to play in a different way. LeBron's going to play the way he wants to play, and that's going to be him dissecting the game in the half court. And then they add all these other pieces. The Davis trade wasn't going to happen because New Orleans just wasn't going to do it because of their ownership issues. So I think some of the criticism is unfair, but I thought Monday was more about him trying to protect his image than it was. I mean, he did go after the Lakers, obviously, but I think he was doing that in a self-preservation way.
I completely agree, but, you know, doing that has ramifications. Do you think it keeps... Is that what keeps Kyrie from coming? And, you know, they had a strained relationship, but is that what keeps Kyrie, or is that what keeps, you know, pick said superstar from considering the Lakers? Or do you think that has nothing to do with what a player decides?
I really think the player, I mean, if players still want to go to the Knicks after what James Dolan has done, then I still don't think it's as impossible as everybody makes it out to be for the Lakers to be able to close on one of these guys. Because it's going to be somebody who respects LeBron and says, let's do this. And for all those no one wants to go play with LeBron, maybe it's true, but I need more than one offseason of information to know that nobody wants to go play with him. And what was it last year? It was Durant staying in Golden State, Paul George staying in Oklahoma City, and then them not trading for Kawhi. That's three guys. And there was only one that we felt like they even had a chance with, and that might have been more of a Pelinka problem than it was a Magic or LeBron problem, and Paul George staying in Oklahoma City. So if they whiff on a summer with 10 different moving parts here, like, this summer is going to be nuts. And if they don't add anybody, then I'm willing to say, yeah, this whole thing's a disaster. No one wants to play with LeBron. Nobody wants to go to this front office. But I just don't think if the Knicks are the best example. If the Knicks can still get guys in free agency, if they're actually going to land Durant, then maybe we're overrating the negative impact of these Lakers stories.
Tend to agree with you, but we'll see. We'll see exactly what you have. The Knicks are, and I do wonder if Durant at some point, because he's so prone to reacting to other people's reactions, social media, or just his friends, at some point, does he get a nudge from his friends like, you're going to go play for James Dolan? Like, wait a second, maybe I shouldn't play for James Dolan. I almost feel like he's that open to suggestion.
I always wonder, like, I know Anthony Davis is pretty impressionable, and that's how I thought he got himself into this problem. Like, I just know it. He's a one as far as his basketball, but I think he's a two. And I don't, like, some people are twos in the office. It doesn't mean they can't do their job, and it doesn't mean they're awesome. It just means that I think Davis is still young and would help, like, would prefer a Kyrie or a Durant to be kind of the face of the franchise. And although all these guys are kind of funny in the way they do this, right? They struggle for a few years and go, I don't want to do this by myself. And then they have to shine or share that shine and spotlight with somebody else. And they're like, you know, I kind of want my own thing. It's better for my brand. And, you know, they just keep changing their minds all the time. But I don't know if Durant could get really close to July 1st and then swing this back to saying, I want to stay in Golden State, or now I need to think about the Clippers, because it's just felt like New York this whole time. But it could be. You know, we've been guilty of this in the past. We all start repeating each other, and we haven't figured out. We don't know.
Anthony Davis plays where next year?
I'll say the Knicks.
Kyrie Irving plays where next year?
I don't know. Good luck. Good luck with him.
That's an odd duck, right?
I would, if there was a gun to my head and they said, you got to guess, I'd just shoot me. Like, I can't read him.
Kevin Durant plays where next year?
I hate this game.
I know.
Can you call me back when I have better information.
It's not about information. It's about gut feel. You just got back from Chicago. You're doing.
Everybody's saying the same thing. It's Knicks, then Brooklyn. I didn't hear the Clippers as much, but that doesn't mean, you know, I didn't talk to all 30 teams, and then everyone 1 through 5 on the depth chart for offices. So none of the information has been new, and that's what always scares me about this stuff. Is I do think the NBA has you know, everybody likes to gossip, and when nothing has been new for months, that's always a sign to me of like, I don't know, maybe everybody's just repeating each other. Oh, he's just going to the Knicks. Yeah, that's a done deal. Like, everyone's job is the Knicks. Done. Now, if I knew that Golden State was kind of like, I don't think Clay's going anywhere, okay? And that's based on conversations. I don't understand why this Clay's going to leave thing keeps coming up. But I don't feel that same sense of confidence out of Golden State and retaining Durant. Yeah. So that's why I think he is leaving. But I always get nervous when I'm like, man, this has been since January. Nobody said anything new or interesting.
He's Ryan Russillo. Check out the Dual Threat podcast on The Ringer or the Ryan Russillo podcast. Good stuff, dude. Let's talk soon.
Thanks, Doug.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
John Middlecoff joins us. He's got the 3 and Out podcast and the Herd podcast network. John, let's start with the beef between Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger. Big Ben's tried to apologize. I was wrong. You were right. I was too mean. I was too tough on Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown wants none of it. And he's also not showing up for OTAs. Why is he still bitter? He got a new contract, got a new home.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the hate is real. You know, maybe Antonio is just really that petty. He did, in fairness to Antonio, because I kind of crushed him yesterday for not showing up. He did show up today. I don't know why he wasn't there yesterday, but he was there today. And maybe Big Ben, you know, just – as you get older, you try to mature a little bit. You know, if you want to look on the glass half full, maybe he is being genuine with this. Maybe he's just completely being fraudulent and wants to look good as Antonio. It's easy to say, right, when AB's gone. I'm kind of tired of this story. You know, I'm going to be fascinated to see if AB and Gruden can get along once the actual season comes. And I think if history shows anything, Ben's probably going to be just okay. Or, I mean, okay, because he's had turnover for years at wide receiver and produced.
Okay, so I look at Antonio Brown did show up today. Odell Beckham Jr. showed up once. They've had 5 workouts. Let's start with OBJ. Now, Antonio Brown at least played all but the last game of last season. Odell Beckham Jr. did not, and he's also in a new home and a new offense. Were you critical of OBJ not showing up?
Yeah, I mean, I thought OBJ, Le'Veon, and then even yesterday Antonio. We'll see if he makes the rest of the month. It's so easy to show up. I was at Niners OTA practice yesterday. When I worked in the NFL, I had to be in the building. It's like a 3-day work week. You get there at breakfast, you go to meetings for a couple hours, you lift, which you're going to do anyway, and then you go on the field for about. Yesterday, Kyle Shanahan's practice was like 1 hour and 20 minutes. I mean, it's the country club version of football now because of the CBA and just in general, the offseason has always been light. It's so easy. There's just, I don't understand why these guys just don't show up. It's a BP fastball for everyone. You know, in the other two sports, in baseball and basketball, there's not really an offseason like this because in basketball, you know, you can just play a pickup game. In baseball, they just play in other leagues or whatever if you want to in the winter. In football, you kind of need to play with your teammates to kind of perfect your craft, right? If you're a wide receiver, whatever position you're in. So I'm always baffled when guys don't show up, especially Le'Veon. Le'Veon did not have one other offer even close to what the Jets gave him. So the Jets threw him a lifeline financially big time. Doesn't he owe it to them a little bit just to show up? Again, these aren't double days. This isn't the Junction Boys. Doug, it's pretty easy.
I know it is. What is the every part of the negative reputation that they have only gets earned even more so. And honestly, doesn't it hurt future guys who try and follow the Le'Veon Bell or the Antonio Brown or the Odell Beckham Jr. path? And like if I'm running a team like, dude, look at these guys. Look at how they react. Even when they do get that lifeline, they still kind of spit in our face. Why would I give them that lifeline?
I mean, it's crazy. And I wanted the Niners to trade for Odell Beckham. And, would he have shown up? Let's say this. Let's say the Rams or a team like the Niners had traded for him. Would he still not have shown up? Because I follow him on Instagram. he's working out at SC. So clearly he doesn't want to be in Cleveland. I think that's pretty clear, right? Not necessarily for the team, but just being in the state of Cleveland in the offseason. I'd be shocked if he shows up to anything. For Le'Veon, it's like, Le'Veon, you're in New York. You know, it's not that bad. You can't I don't get it. And I saw the list of other Browns, like Antonio Callaway. Like, what is that guy doing? I mean, why aren't you at practice? Jarvis Landry, is now he kind of following the Odell? Like, why should I be there anyway? Not an ideal kind of the way it's played out so far for the Browns, but, for sure.
Agree with you. Totally agree. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What are your thoughts on what New England has done here with Julian Edelman, extending his deal? That makes it, is that Julian Edelman learning from Wes Welker and going like, I'm not going to fight this thing at the end of my career. I'm going to just end this thing in New England.
Yeah, I think that Edelman has always liked Bill a lot more than Welker. It feels like Edelman has been a little bit of just a better soldier. Like he thrives in that environment where Welker, you know, had some kind of pretty public butted heads and said some things. Him and Bill just weren't always on the same page. It's kind of felt always like the opposite with Julian, even more than, remember, even last year with Gronk. Gronk was kind of mad at Bill, and obviously Tom was. It doesn't feel like Julian's ever had a problem with the Patriots. If anything, he's very loyal to them. I mean, hell, he might look at them as like, if it wasn't for them, I might have been just some, you know, seventh-round pick that washed out of the league really fast. He's taken, I remember the last deal he signed was much lower than market value. I think he values what they give him. You know, they made him, I mean, an absolute legend in that city, a multiple-time champion. So if you take a little bit lower of a deal, I didn't even see the numbers, but let's say it's a couple million less than he could get somewhere else, what he's worth in that city for the rest of his life, and even just around football. I mean, when it's all said and done, who's to say they don't win another championship these next couple years? He's a four-time champion. You know what? You've been to these events with these guys. There's a big difference when you walk in and you've never won anything and you walk in and you got three or four rings. I mean, that guy just stands out in the room. So Edelman's earning power the rest of his life, and clearly Julian's really tight with Tom, and I give him a lot of credit for having the self-awareness of, you don't always have to live in the short term. I mean, the big picture of earning potential when you're a part of something like this, and I see it in my own backyard with the Warriors, you know, these guys are going to be made men in the Bay Area forever, you know, and obviously they are all making a ton of money. It's a little different in football, but I give Edelman a lot of credit for kind of figuring that out.
What do you think? We were discussing this earlier. What do you think Bobby Wagner's value is?
People always try to, like, you know, crush linebackers' value. I think the top guys, I mean, Kuechly has battled injuries, but when he's been on the field historically, he's been one of the best players in the league when every game he's played. So to me, he's always been worth, if you're paying Khalil Mack $20 million a year, I got no problem paying my middle linebacker close to that if I think that, you know, if I value that guy, high character guy, and he checks all those boxes. I mean, I have no problem paying him huge money. I mean, as long as I think he's going to be able to stay healthy and I don't think his body's breaking down, I would imagine what, he's 28, 29 at the end of the season, maybe 30. So, I mean, the age is somewhat of a factor, but, I mean, what he means to that team. He's another guy that, you know, at times Richard and Earl and Cam and Michael Bennett, it always felt like they kind of butted heads with the program. That's never been an issue for him. I mean, he's kind of been Pete's guy. And rightfully so. I mean, it's been a perfect marriage for both of them. I would, if I was them, have no problem giving them a massive deal.
That's John Middlecoff joining us, former NFL scout. Of course, you hear him on his 3 and Out podcast, part of the Herd Podcast Network. It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Did you see the picture of the first round draft picks from last week?
Yeah.
Okay,
at LA.
Right.
With the jerseys on?
Yeah. So they have the jerseys on, and there's Hollywood Brown, who's listed it.
Do you think he's standing on his tippy toes, though?
Possibly. I mean, who among us hasn't at certain times? Okay, but then next to him is Kyler Murray, and Kyler Murray appears to be shorter than Hollywood Brown. Like, look, do I think it matters at the end of the day? Probably not, but I don't buy that he was really 5'10", when I had been told by a lot of people he's always been 5'8 and change, and suddenly he pops up at 5'10 when they measure him at the combine.
See, my biggest issue with him over the whole draft period was never his height, because I think if you just watched him on TV in the fall, you knew he was tiny. You know, whether he's 5'8 and three quarters or 5'10 flat, he's just really short. To me, it was the weight. And, you know, I never felt like he was actually 205. When I just watched him on TV, it felt like he was playing in the 180s. And then he refused to run. You know, I mean, is he going to play this season? Because, again, I mean, I think it's pretty clear he's probably not exactly 5'10". But is he going to play the season at 185 in the NFL? Or is he going to be able to play at 2-whatever and still be that fast? Because at the end of the day, you can't avoid a lot of hits when you're that quick. But some guys are going to get you. And when they do, when Aaron Donald falls on you, or DeForest Buckner for the Niners, I mean, those guys are 300-plus pounds and huge and coming at you at warp speed. So my bigger issue is just the girth, is his size, not necessarily his height.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit. He got ragdolled a couple times playing in the college football playoff, and that's against college kids. What happens when an NFL defensive lineman just touches him, right?
Or Seattle. I mean, you look at the way Seattle plays defense, regardless who's playing, and last year, bunch of new players, they hit you so hard. Like, to play for Pete Carroll, you have to be such a physical player. I mean, it's just a physical division. I mean, I'm at a Niner practice yesterday. I mean, Richard, and this is why I crush these guys for not going to practice, Richard's just chilling. It's so easy for these guys. But Richard, during the season, you know, when Kyler Murray comes out, and if Richard's playing corner, he's one of the hardest-hitting corners in the history of the NFL. I'll tell you this, he ain't 5'10". He will mollywop you. And so what's going to happen when Kyler meets Richard Sherman? It's not even just the D-linemen, right? Some of these defensive backs that will throw their body around. That's going to be fascinating to see. Like, does he play 16 games next year unencumbered by any injuries? I don't know.
The Oklahoma drill is going the way of the dodo. Is that going to change football?
I don't think. I've been to a lot of training camp practices, not everywhere in the NFL the last several years, but you don't even see the Oklahoma drill. I don't think it's like a huge part of NFL football anymore. I think it's a much bigger deal in college. Because once you get to the NFL, especially once a guy's played in the NFL, his toughness or whatever is kind of established. And it's probably something that happened more in the 80s and 90s, maybe even the early 2000s. But I never saw it when I worked in the NFL for Coach Reed. And Andy runs a pretty physical training camp. It's more like goal line drills and stuff, like full team, not just one-on-one goal or Oklahoma. I think you see it a lot more in college when you have an 18, 19-year-old guy and you know, that guy that he's replacing went to the NFL, and you're trying to see what you have because you don't have preseason games. So I don't think it affects NFL football at all, or even practice at all.
How much will it affect NFL football that the owners gave the competition committee the go-ahead today to decide whether to refine the new rule allowing replay challenges involving pass interference? How do you think this changes the league? Do you think, is it now all of a sudden we're going to have those flags in the last 2 minutes too, right?
But to me, it doesn't, unless you're adding challenges, if you add things they can challenge, it doesn't necessarily slow or speed up the game you still have the same amount of challenge flags, right? To me, the bigger story would be if they've added you can challenge holding, you can challenge PI, you can challenge whatever, and they've also, you get two extra challenge flags. Because right now, you have two, and if you get one wrong, you lose one. Well, what if you doubled that? To me, that'd be a bigger deal. I don't mind being able to challenge even subjective plays like pass interference, which I think some would argue many of them that we see on Sundays are pretty obvious. And I think those are the ones that would be challenged, you'd think. I mean, there would probably be some, you know, kind of coin flip ones challenged too, for sure. But if the number of challenges stay the same, I don't think it really affects anything. I think it's kind of overblown. It's fun for us to talk about, and it's a main story because there's not much going on. But I think in reality, it's not going to have as big an impact as we think.
Awesome stuff. John Middlecoff joining us. By the way, John, did you enjoy Aaron Rodgers' breakdown of Game of Thrones and why he didn't like Game of Thrones finale?
Well, I'm not a huge Game of Thrones guy, Doug.
Me neither. Me neither, but I do think it's interesting. Guys are complaining about how realistic the conclusion of a series which involves dragons is.
I know. Well, he was somewhat invested, right, because he was in the show.
Yes.
Clearly a diehard. I wish Aaron, who's clearly a really smart guy, would just act like that more often and be more fun about football. Like, I mean, think of what a rock star he'd be if he just engaged a little more like that instead of always kind of taking the other route. I mean, he's clearly got a big time personality if he was willing to open up and just talk, but he doesn't do that whenever, if you ask about Mike McCarthy or his new coach, he's not going to talk like that. Talk about Game of Thrones. He was just he was outstanding. It was one of the best 2-minute bites of his career.
Yeah. No, he'll talk about hoop like that. He'll talk about other things. It is something about football.
What do you think of Juwan Howard? Two Michigan men now with Harbaugh and him at Michigan.
I'm intrigued. I mean, like, look, I actually like their process. I thought the guys they talked to. I mean, the fact that the Big Ten had no black head coaches and they talked to all guys that are accomplished. You know, I'm sure they reached out to Shaka and he passed. Ed Cooley at Providence is a gem. So is Laval Jordan, who used to be there as an assistant. You know, I don't think it's an easy job because you're following a guy who's basically considered a saint. And so you can't break rules. And you lost all your players from last year. And you lost your best recruit, Jalen Wilson, who decommitted and got out of his letter. So I don't think it's an easy job. Look, if he hires a good staff and he's invested in it, there's no reason that he can't be good. The question is, does he understand it's a job? You're going to have to work hard. But he and Stack coming back from pros to college, I think that's a good thing for the sport.
Oh, I know. Penny's crushing recruiting.
Crushing.
It's pretty cool.
Crushing in recruiting. It's good to have a kind of new generation of guys who played and starred in the game coming back to college when there is kind of an overarching narrative that people are trying to get out of the college game. And I think this proves it to be a little bit false. So we'll see.
Well, Doug, have a good day. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
You too, brother. That's John Middlecoff joining us. Does an outstanding download his podcast. I do. It's called 3 and Out. You learn a ton about the National Football League.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
What if I told you Draymond Green has had a bigger effect on the change of the NBA? There's always been those glue guys on great NBA teams. Always. You know, Dennis Rodman was a glue guy in three different NBA championship teams. People forget when Dennis Rodman was the worm and he was in Detroit, he was the most ridiculously talented defender and rebounder the league had ever seen. He could, like Draymond, guard positions 1 through 5. And then, well, he transformed himself into the best rebounder in the league and was still an incredible defender. But this was at a time in the league in which he didn't really guard centers. He was too small. And he didn't really switch off into guarding point guards. That wasn't how it worked. Of course, did the same thing in San Antonio. And like there's a reason Dennis Rodman's a Hall of Famer, rightfully so. What Draymond Green has added is, one, an offensive skill, the ability to pass, handle the ball, shoot some, and suddenly his shooting has taken off here in the playoffs. He's not really a post scorer, but, you know, you can throw it to him down there and he'll be an active passer. But the ability to guard 1 through 5 at 6'6" and guard these point guards changes everything. You don't need to put a big stiff out there when you can shut everybody down. You don't need a rim protector when your center can guard the point guard. And oh yeah, by the way, Draymond Green's a pretty good shot blocker. So too is Kevin Durant. It's one of the reasons that they have rim protection even when Looney's not on the floor or Bogut's not on the floor. It's not that point forward hasn't previously existed. It's that point center has not until Draymond Green. And while the league continues to search for more scoring lead guards, we have them. Right? We have a bunch of them. Lillard is different than Harden, is different than Steph, is different than Trae Young, is different than Kemba, is different than Kyrie. All of those guys are not traditional point guards, but point guard-ish, who can score, who can pass, who can take over a game offensively. We like to make it out like we haven't seen anything like Steph Curry. It's true, but there are other kind of versions of him which are interesting. There's no other Draymond Green. They tried to make P.J. Tucker into Draymond Green, and he got exposed when the Warriors had to go smaller and had to play kind of their old style. Like he looked like a guy who could only really guard Kevin Durant. Whereas Draymond showed the ability in this last series to be able to guard Myers Leonard and Enes Kanter, as well as Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Like, we talk so much about Steph, and we should, because we are in love with just the way he is, the shots he makes, the passes he makes, and the way in which he bounces around. And I mean, it's an unbelievable thing to watch. And because of Draymond's antics, he usually gets no passes, and rightfully so. But I believe if you watched it with a basketball guy, and if you looked historically, and you're like, when did the league change? When did it go from you don't need a center anymore? It's when it was like the graphs, and they come together. It's when Draymond Green and the Warriors hit. It's when they go like, hey, we don't need Andrew Bogut. We got Draymond. We don't need JaVale McGee. We got Draymond. We don't need DeMarcus Cousins. We got Draymond. I believe that he has invented a position that has dramatically and will continue to change the NBA, more so even than Steph Curry, because Curry's style has been done before. Usually it was off the bench scores. Bobby Jackson used to score like that. Right? We've seen Jamal Crawford. Look, Steph's a much better player than Jamal Crawford. But it's the same kind of thing where you don't really have, you're a one, you're a two, whatever. You just come in and get buckets. And Steph can run a team, but he's a bucket getter. And he gets them, I mean, it's bam, bam, bam. You're like, whoa, what just happened? And from range and going right and going left, like, he's an all-time great. This is not me in any way diminishing Steph Curry's offensive prowess. But there are other guys that play in some ways similar to him and have played that similar, maybe to less success. I've never seen a Draymond Green who can play all five positions at both ends of the floor and be effective at all five.